This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What impact has the national debate on the Brett Kavanaugh allegations had on consent and sexual assault? Will the recent national debate on the alleged behavior of the Supreme Court justice have a chilling effect on women coming forward? What are the laws concerning consent? How does no mean no? And how do you know when you've got to know? What are the rights of the accuser and of the accused? We're talking about consent and sexual assault today. We're joined by Andrea Lopez. She is a community engagement coordinator for the Rape Crisis Center of San Antonio. Sar Sumrick is with us. He's the director of the Consent Academy. And Rick Gilprick is with us. Gilprick is he's the regional outreach and support program director for the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. And we welcome your calls and emails today as we talk about this issue. You can remain anonymous. Tell us how these hearings impacted you. Have you ever come forward and told about what happened to you, a sexual assault, and how was that received? Give us a call, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet at us at @tprsource. So Andrea Lopez with the Rape Crisis Center of San Antonio. The coverage, national coverage of the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings, a lot of that was involving stories of his allegations of his behavior as a youth, acting badly, as the allegation was, around women. And women were listening to this, you know, and hearing what was going on?
Well, I can speak to what we saw directly and what we've been seeing just in our work here locally, and that is an uptick in the crisis calls and chats that we've been fielding and receiving from folks. So we looked at the month of September and we split the month in half. So we compared the first half to the last half. And we saw in our calls specifically, the first half of the month, we saw around 70 crisis calls, individuals calling the center, and that jumped to a little over 100. So that's nearly a 45% increase that we saw there, where folks were specifically citing the Kavanaugh hearing as a direct trigger for their own experiences. And not only that, but we saw individuals staying on the phone longer. So an average call, you know, lasts anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes. And we're seeing individuals on the phone for 30 to 45 minutes being triggered, right? Either by a direct reminder of their own perpetrator in Kavanaugh and just the sight and sounds of him on the screen, right? And just reminders of their own experiences of trauma as well.
And that mirrors what was happening nationally. The National Sexual Assault Hotline increased more than 200% on the day of the Ford Kavanaugh hearing. But so, Andrea, without giving away too much of what one individual may have said, can you kind of give me an idea what was on their mind?
Yeah, so some individuals have expressed to us that, you know, their sexual assault or their experience of trauma happened years ago, and maybe they've healed and they've been in therapy and they have felt in a recovered state. But being so triggered again by just the events in media coverage and in the news was so much so that those things all came flooding back. And so individuals seeking counseling again, specifically through us, that's one thing that we saw. Another thing that we heard voiced over and over again is the bravery that it takes, the immense amount of courage and digging deep to come forward and say anything surrounding an experience of sexual violence, only to be met with scrutiny, to have your story picked apart, to have to retell your story again and again, and how painful that in itself can be. And we know that the number one reason folks don't come forward, don't speak out, don't report, is fear of not being believed. And so we saw that play out on a national stage.
It seemed like there was a hardening from certain individuals, part of the political spectrum, who were now, do you think they're less likely to want to hear the allegations moving forward? Has sexual assault been politicized, and does that hurt the overall conversation of trying to, because these are not political events. These happen to everybody. They don't check, you know, who you voted for when you become victimized in this way. We need to be able to avoid making this a red versus blue type issue. So it would be, but it seemed like it became that, at least for that week, and hopefully it not going forward.
Sure, and you're exactly right. To your point, sexual violence is incredibly pervasive. It's an everyone issue. It's a social justice issue, a human rights issue, a public health issue, and it's not simply about politics or being on one side of the aisle or the other. It is a human issue, and it's something in which everybody has a stake, and everybody is should be committed to preventing and eliminating across the spectrum.
So, but after we've had these hearings with Kavanaugh, is it easier or harder, more difficult for anyone who's been the victim of a sexual assault to come forward? Any ideas?
I think, and Rick, and anyone can jump in at this point, but yep. I think specifically speaking again to what we're seeing in our work and the responses from survivors and folks that we are serving, both sides of the coin there. So sure, this can absolutely be a deterrent and a hindrance for folks to come forward. It does nothing. In fact, it undoes and reverses our efforts at creating safe, inclusive spaces where individuals feel comfortable to speak out and come forward where they know they're going to be met with a responsive belief. So sure, for individuals, this is doing nothing for them in that way at all. And we're only setting ourselves back in that regard. And then for others, there's a fire lit under them just in personal conversations, interactions that I've had around this is unacceptable, this is not okay. Conversations need to continue, dialogue needs to keep happening so that these shifts in culture can be made.
And so Rick Giprich with the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault, what's your view on that?
You know, I think despite the outcome of the confirmation, or even perhaps because of it, what we are finding is exactly what Andrea was talking about locally, but we're finding that around the state, is that our rape crisis centers, all of our sexual assault programs, numbers are increasing as far as hotline calls, as far as clients coming in and wanting to seek services. I think what's happening is that you're finding that more people are coming forward to share their story. They find solidarity in Dr. Ford's testimony and in what she shared. And what she did for this movement is unprecedented in the sense that she validated the experiences of thousands, even tens of thousands of survivors across the country and across the world, really, who have never felt validated before. So we know that our survivors are coming forth, they're sharing their stories, and they're demanding justice. So on the flip side, it's a detriment because I think this may push some people further back into their recovery. It might push some people further back into not wanting to report it or talk about it. But it has also opened up the doors for other people to engage in these conversations. Because of her, they feel safe.
All right. We're talking about sexual assault and consent. Not just framed by the Kavanaugh issue. I mean, that's part of it because it brought this to the fore. But this is an ongoing concern. This was an issue before Kavanaugh. It's going to be an issue after Kavanaugh. But now it happened, and people have a lot to think about, and we have to process this as a community. So, call in. Have you survived a sexual assault? Did you report it, and why not? Have you decided not to call in and report it? How did that affect your life? We want to hear your story. You can be anonymous. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. What needs to happen so that we have an awakening in our country about consent and sexual assault? We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about sexual assault and consent today. We invite you to call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Where are we in America on sexual assault and consent? Where do we want to be? How do we get there? Let's bring in our other guest. This is Sar Cermak. He is the director of the Consent Academy based in Seattle. And Sar, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much.
Tell me more about the basics of consent. What is it that most people don't understand?
Sure. The basics of consent, most people understand the idea that no means no, or yes means yes. But consent is a lot more complicated than that. The basic concepts that people really need to understand around consent are capacity. Does the person have the ability to give and receive consent? Informed consent, do people have the ability to know what it is they're consenting to, and the actual agreement. So do they say yes? How do they say yes? Do they say no? How do they say no? And how is that perceived by the other person?
When do you know you're in trouble? If you're say you're the male, and you have a female and you feel like, you know, and you're pursuing a relationship, what are the signs that you need to recognize in saying this, I am out of bounds?
Basically, that's a really complicated question, because it's going to depend on the interaction between the two people. The basic answer is, if you see that there is a significant difference in power, that's a thing to really pay attention to. So someone who has more authority or more agency, or even just a significant physical difference between the two, that's something to pay attention to. The other thing to watch for is where there is significant hesitation or flinching. So nonverbal cues that say the other person is uncomfortable. Those are definitely things to watch for. And the third thing would be, the main thing would be, when the person tells you, I'm uncomfortable or this is not okay. And as soon as that happens, that's the time to just stop and not continue with whatever behavior is happening.
So if you're going to have a modern relationship with an individual on an equal basis, you know, that's the mm-hmm. thing we really want, is to have everybody on an equal footing. I mean, should you have a conversation about sex before you start moving towards sex? I mean, it seems like the thing to do is, like, you ask the other person, like, are we going to have sex? You know, what should we know about that? You know, where are we in this relationship?
Yeah, definitely having a good conversation, a good negotiation before engaging in sexual activity. But ideally, that even begins before you get to that point. So engaging in sexual behavior should be the later step. Engaging in consensual behavior leading up to that with, what do you want? How would you like to do things? Is it okay if we get together today? Is it okay if I give you a hug? Establishing what consent looks like in the relationship early, so that when you get to the sexual piece of the relationship, whether that's 20 minutes or 20 days or 20 months in, you already have established a baseline for what consent looks like.
Things have changed a lot recently with people getting together on these apps. Has that mm-hmm. changed things?
Absolutely. Apps like Tinder or Grindr or other hookup apps, people engage in a much more anonymous style of hookup. It's a definite change in our, from what I grew up with, certainly, but also in terms of consent, there's this feeling that if you agree to a hookup on one of these apps, that you are giving consent. And I think that's where people get into a lot of trouble.
So you're not. I want to be clear. If you're putting yourself out there on Grindr or Tinder, that is not consent.
No, that is perhaps consent to meet up with the person, but it is definitely not consent for any form of sexual interaction. That needs to be get in person. That needs to be something people establish when they are face to face and together with one another.
Do you think people still need to figure this out? Is there some social learning that has to happen?
Absolutely. We don't really educate people very well about consent and consensual behavior. I think there needs to be a much greater national conversation around, what does consent look like? How do we teach, especially young folks, about consent? And how is consent enforced when something goes wrong? We are still way behind in terms of that conversation.
So if you don't have a verbal consent, I mean, there are other nonverbal consents. We know that you can... this is tricky. Thin ice.
It very much is. We often use nonverbal consent in our culture. It's something we see in media, movies, television all the time. People get together and they're like, oh, okay, you know, let's be sexual
fantasy.
Without actually
that's
talking
fantasy.
About it. Absolutely. So what we talk about is nonverbal consent can be consent, but your level of risk goes way up whenever you're relying on it. So being able to say clearly and definitively verbally, yes, I absolutely want to do this, what we call an explicit or enthusiastic yes, is a much safer place to be. And if you're the person receiving that and you're not really sure if the other person has said yes, that's the time to stop and not do anything and reconfirm whether or not consent is actually present.
Let me go to the phone lines. Number is 210-614-8980. We're trying to negotiate the tricky waters of consent. We're talking about sexual assault, which should be, you know, there's no two ways about that. That's not tricky. We know let's not go there. So 210-614-8980. If you want to call in, you can remain anonymous. Judith is on the line. And Judith, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Hi, Judith.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
So the situation with me was I was prior military, and when my sexual assault happened, I had actually gone out with a brother flight, and it was a whole bunch of us going out together, and I even had what's called a wingman. So my friend had gone along with me, and when the night was over, we had gone back to the hotel room together, and one of our brother flight wanted to escort us home. The situation happened that none of us were of our right mind to give consent, I believe. And ultimately, when the assault happened, I felt very embarrassed and guilty for having been somewhere that I wasn't supposed to be, with people that I probably shouldn't have been hanging out with. And so I never brought my assault forward. And so the thing with Kavanaugh that really triggered me was that, for me, I don't remember the name of the person that assaulted me, the person that raped me, but I remember so many details of the actual event. And then later, because I never reported it or because I never told anyone about it, when I went for my yearly physical, it was discovered that I had contracted an STD, that I had had it for so long that it then made it impossible for me to become pregnant. So as a result of that trauma, not only did I experience the embarrassment and the guilt, but also I was basically sterilized because of it.
Judith, have you talked to anyone? Have you gotten counseling?
I have, and it took me years to ever be able to speak about it. I actually became an alcoholic, and it led to so many other issues in my life. But I have been able to reach out to help, and I've had such a good support system, which is what is making it easier for me now to be able to get on, you know, the radio to talk sure. about it.
So Judith, it seems like some of the takeaways from the story you're telling us is, number one, if you are the victim survivor of a sexual assault, that you should get yourself checked out immediately, and also you should try to find some support that you can talk to, because this is going to just tear apart your psyche. And I really want to thank you, Judith, for calling in. I appreciate your story. So let me go over to Andrea Lopez with the Rape Crisis Center of San Antonio. If you can tell me, you know, what do you hear from Judith?
Yeah, absolutely. And a complete thank you to her for being brave enough to share that, her experience, and, you know, so many things that she echoed are so common to what we hear and see in the survivors that we work with and serve, not coming forward, not speaking out, and then finally being in a place after healing and after utilizing and reaching out to support systems, we know that that safety in that response and that safety in the support that one can give and receive is exactly the anecdote for trauma, right? And what can lead to healing. She elevated that she didn't remember details, couldn't recall things. And again, that's entirely normal as well after trauma, that the brain literally changes, right? And so that is not to anything that's abnormal. She mentioned the shame and the guilt, the embarrassment, because there is so much silence and stigma surrounding sexual assault, sexual violence. This is exactly the culture that we're working to combat.
Right, but she talked about her memory, and the issue of memory in those instances is that you will have these extremely vivid flashbacks of moments that you remember every tiny detail. But the other issues that sort of bookend those memories of the flashbacks that you have are completely unavailable to you. And then we have people, we saw this with the Ford hearings, where they try to use the way that the brain works in these instances as a way to discredit the individual. And, you know, that's just not right. I mean, can you talk about that, Andrea?
No, yeah, 100%. And we know that just by definition, trauma is when you fear for your life or somebody else's, so much so that you involuntarily enter into this state of fight, flight, or freeze. And we know that, you know, the body releases cortisol and adrenaline in responses of fight or flight. Those hormones are expelled and released, right? But in a freeze situation, those hormones have nowhere to go. So the trauma is literally stuck on a loop, and it's replayed over and over again. And so we know that the brain changes. So the part of the brain that controls capacity for language shrinks and is diminished. And so that affects a survivor's ability to recall details and recount their experience. We know that memory retrieval and storage and encoding new information is also impacted. So things will be fragmented and things aren't going to make sense. We know that the amygdala in the brain, right? Your part of the brain that detects danger and controls emotion, that's an overdrive. And there's a hypersensitivity that takes place there. And so behavior that's seemingly abnormal or unusual that a survivor may exhibit will manifest in those ways too. And so by no means are any of the responses unusual, abnormal, or atypical, right? And everybody responds and processes differently too. So honoring that is super critical as well.
And I want to get Rick in on this. He's with the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. In Judith's story, there was also the betrayal of trust. She was with people that she felt that she knew and that she could trust, and that seems to be something that happens quite a bit in these types of stories. And you know, alcohol is involved, getting people isolated, have put them in circumstances where they're not 100%. You know, they can be partially blamed, so therefore they're totally blamed. Do you hear that in Judith's story?
Yeah, a couple of things too. First of all, Judah, thank you so much for sharing your story. As Andrea said, it was incredibly brave for you to come on air and share that experience with the listeners. So thank you for that. Second, too, I think this whole conversation in and of itself is triggering. So for survivors that are listening or anyone who has a loved one who's experienced this, please know that folks like myself and Andrea are here to help and here to listen to your stories as well. So please reach out to us if you need us. But betrayal is a big part of sexual violence. And, you know, there's never an expectation that this is going to happen to you. I think it's ingrained in our behavior sometimes that we just inherently trust the people that we love and people that we hang out with and people that we care for.
And that seems to be just another wound that's inflicted in a sexual assault, particularly by someone that you know.
Right.
If you trust them, how did this happen? How did you put yourself in this situation? The self-blaming, and we can try to decode that as well. We're going to take a break, but Laura is on the line. And Laura, please hold on. I definitely want to hear what you want to tell us. So also, the phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues. We continue diving into sexual assault and consent right after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh's lifelong appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court is a controversial subject for many Americans, especially those who have been impacted by sexual violence. We're talking about that this afternoon. We would love to hear your stories. If you want to share, you can remain anonymous. The number is 210-614-8980. Sharing your stories is one way that we can bring about healing. Also talk about what we need to do in our country and with our society to no longer tolerate sexual violence, and also help people figure out consent. 210-614-8980. Lara has been hanging on. And Lara, welcome to The Source. Thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
Sure, thank you. I have a little bit of a different direction. In fact, my primary reason for calling in today was the guilt that I had of not continuing my story. What happened to me is I was sexually assaulted by a doctor that I had gone to for years. And I came forward a week after it happened. And I was even ridiculed for coming up, forward a week later. Why didn't you come the next day? And so women are going to be, I guess, ridiculed if they come, if they wait an hour or if they wait 10 years. And my case is we did go to a criminal trial, and he was found guilty. When he was found guilty, he won. The state made an error during the trial, and then he appealed and he won. So the medical trial and the state came to me again and said, we need to do this criminal trial again because he's guilty and we can't have someone like this out there. So fast forward from the time the medical board trial and the criminal trial, I was continually threatened. The life of my children were threatened. So I could not go forward again. I could not go through another trial because of the guilt of bringing what my children had to go through, and did I make the right decision going forward? And then the guilt of, oh, my God, I let this man go free. At the end of the day, I let him go free when he's a criminal. So I'm calling today because there's guilt in me that because I was so afraid of my life and the life of my children that I didn't do another criminal trial. I told the medical board, I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore. I'm scared. And this happened 8 years ago, and I'm struggling. I'm struggling with, I don't date much anymore because I don't trust. The state betrayed me. The lawyers betrayed me. I ended up hiring my own lawyer. It was detrimental, has been continually detrimental to me and my family. My younger daughter is the one who called me today to say, Mom, listen to Texas Public Radio. They're doing this segment. And I really wanted to call in, but I knew that I would break down. And this betrayal of the state, of the system, has torn our family apart. And I hear these other women speak out. And I'm so tired of us being afraid. And I'm tired of us not having a platform to speak out. And when I heard you all were doing this today, I had to speak out. And trust me, it's pretty darn scary to speak out.
Laura, thank you. I'm so glad you did call in and you did speak out. Andrea Lopez is with us. She is the Community Engagement Coordinator for the Rape Crisis Center of San Antonio.
Laura, thank you so very much for calling in. I am sorry that you ever had to endure anything and continue to, for you and for your family.
Victimized and re-victimized over again.
Right. And she's absolutely correct in that there's a systemic piece to be talked about and really to be centered in the conversation around sexual assault, sexual violence. And this is one of and it's another barrier to individuals coming forward is the complete ridicule and shame that comes with having to navigate systems not designed to be safe, inclusive, supportive channels as they should be. And I can say that that's exactly our sole purpose at the Rape Crisis Center is to let folks know that whether the incident of sexual violence happened recently or years ago, wherever you are in that journey, in that process, we are here to help, and we have ways to get you plugged into to our services and get you connected in that way. But again, this speaks to the continued need for challenging the culture and structures that are in place.
It sounds like Laura wants to move on with her life, and that's a completely understandable position to be in. She found herself in a situation that it was taking so much of her in order to try to bring justice to what happened to her. Is that too much to ask? Can she move forward with her life?
And again, anybody can weigh in here, but that looks different for everybody, and everyone has the right to live their fullest potential, and to feel safe and healthy and protected. And so, sure, that's absolutely not too much to ask, right? And that journey is complex, and it's not linear. And so, there are going to be moments of breakthroughs and healing and stuff feels good. And then there are going to be setbacks. And so that's never sort of an easy process to navigate.
Okay. So Rick Giprich with the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault.
So I think Laura's story is all too familiar to a lot of folks and a lot of survivors. That guilt that she felt is something that is normal. It comes with having to go through this entire process and this journey of healing. You know, non-stranger rapes are the least likely to get reported, and they're also the least likely to get through the judicial process. The fact that hers did go through that, that's, I'm not going to say that that's rare, but that's a good thing that it went that far. Now, what happened to her and what happened after the fact is a different piece of this puzzle as well that she's going to have to deal with. And so I think Dr. Ford and the Kavanaugh hearing has done is it's inspired us even more so to kind of tear down those systems that promote a culture of sexual violence. And we want to work continuously with advocates and folks around the state and the local programs.
So I want to hear from Sarah Cermak on this, but I first want to bring up a point here. So when Laura brought these charges forward, did go through a court process. They were made aware with the medical board. Like you said, Rick, those are victories. He was able to escape the charges but people were made aware in the public that this individual was a sexual predator and was abusing his position of power and authority in order to prey upon people who trusted him. So she was not able to get his medical license pulled. She was not able to put him behind bars, but she was able to out him to that world of what he really is, and probably there are consequences that this person had to deal with in his own personal life in dealing with all of this. So should Laura take the victories that she can find and cherish those or remember those, and also in trying to figure out ways to moving forward? She was not completely ignored. So it wasn't everything that she would have wanted. It wasn't the Hollywood ending, but this was something, and we should hang on to those. Let me go to Andrea first. I'm going to hear from Sarah, but Andrea.
So to Rick's point, I think that those are victories absolutely to be celebrated and to be honored. But there's an and also component to that as well. We don't stop there, and that's not enough.
Sure, but she needs something to hang on to. I mean, so Sarah Cermak, director of the Consent Academy, based in Seattle. What are you hearing?
Definitely, I hear. You know, that she was able to come forward is amazing. And the ability to speak up and share one's story, even after the fact, is really, really important. I think we have to recognize that people who do come forward need our support. And that is a thing that we're lacking both systemically as a whole nation, but also in a lot of our law enforcement, education, and even human resources. The ability to give support to those folks when they do come forward and help them get through the process is critical to the step of actually having people be held accountable for their actions.
What are the rights of the accuser? If I'm going to accuse someone of sexual assault, do I have any rights? So let me go to Andrea Lopez, since you probably are familiar with what's happening here locally. I mean, what rights do I have if I'm going to accuse someone of sexually assaulting me?
Well, if someone alleges sexual assault, comes forward and makes a report, we at the Rape Crisis Center can absolutely accompany folks to precincts or substations. We can invite law enforcement into our space for survivors to make a report and do that and follow them through that process. So I'm not exactly sure.
I'm just wondering because, am I guaranteed a right to Do you even have a right to having filling out a report or having a rape kit made and having a rape kit tested? Or what? Rick over at the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault.
So, and Andrea can talk about the local process here in San Antonio, but yes, you have a right to seek help after a sexual assault. If you are sexually assaulted, the most important thing that you can do is to report it, call the Rape Crisis Center hotline, call the National Sexual Assault Hotline, let someone know. Once a Rape Crisis Center is informed, or once you've called law enforcement and you're so inclined to make a report, there's a process that kind of gets started. You go to a hospital, you have a sexual assault exam done, they call an advocate from a local sexual assault program, in this case the Rape Crisis Center, to be with you from the time that they get there until the time that you're ready to go home. They are a source of support, they are a hand to hold, and they are someone who's going to tell you that you are believed and that is not your fault.
All right, we're taking a quick break. We'll be right back. We got a lot of callers. We're going to try and get as many on the air as we can. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about sexual assault and consent. What do we need to know about that? If you have a question or a comment, call in. The number is 210-614-8980. Art is on the line. Art, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, hi. How you doing?
Okay, sir.
I just wanted to chime in, too, and kind of tell my story, too. Both my parents and my stepfather were all emotionally and physically abused as children. As I was growing up, I was also emotionally, physically abused. And so I don't think I was emotionally and mentally equipped at the time to deal with a lot of life's problems. And when I was in infantry school in California, alcohol abuse played a big role in it, and it led to my own sexual assault. Mm. And being in the military, you know, you can't, you just can't tell nobody. It doesn't work that way. And so for 20 years, just about, you know, having to carry all this, you know, and deal with my own issues and alcohol abuse and seeing everything that's going on now, I just, excuse me.
It's all right.
I don't want it to happen to my daughter. Yeah. I got a 7-year-old girl and I just don't want it to happen to her.
Well, Art, you calling in right now, telling your story, and I know how tough it is. You're helping create a world a little bit safer for your daughter. So thank you for your call. Rick Kiprich, the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. Sexual assault happens both genders, all genders.
It does. And thank you so much, Art, for sharing your story. And again, you know, we can't reiterate enough how important it is for men to come forth with their stories as well. The more men who report their victimization, the more normal it is for other men to feel comfortable and want to seek help as well. How you are getting help, how you're talking about your story, Art, is setting a perfect example for the conversations that you should be having with your children as well. It serves to us as an important dialogue to have among families. And I think that's almost what's missing, is that we've made this issue so taboo, specifically among men, that it makes it hard for us to want to talk about it. It makes it hard for us to share our stories, to come forth and to say something about it. But I think you're doing the right thing by coming on air and being brave and sharing that. And this is setting an amazing example for your kids and for your daughter.
All right. Veronica's called in. Hi, Veronica. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. I was just calling to inquire about 25 years ago, I was assaulted by my sister's father. And I guess as a child, you kind of just want to forget about it and not think about it. And all I had remembered was that the case was dropped. And I didn't really know why until about 6 months ago when my mom gave me a letter stating that there was evidence found, but at the time the case wasn't being opened any further. And now being 34 years old and seeing this, it kind of brought a lot of rage and just confusion. And I've reached out to lawyers, I've reached out to a lot of people, and I just, everybody's saying there's nothing that we can do about it at this point. And so I was just calling to see if there was some kind of resources that could help me, because he's still out there, and I've had two nieces that were born, and, you know, life happens, and people want to come around and see their family after a while, and I don't know how to approach it now.
Veronica, your call, I mean, I'm sure there are many, many, many people who are listening to the radio right now, and you are telling their story. They are exactly where you are. They went through something almost precisely word for word what you experienced, and you were speaking for those people and asking the question that is on their mind. So let me go to Rick Giprich Jr. He's with the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault. Isn't the statute of limitations 10 years in Texas for something like this?
Well, the statute of limitations varies depending on, you know, whether there's evidence or not. In most cases, you have, if it happened to you as a child, you have up until 10 years, up until your 18th birthday plus 10 years. But if there was evidence found, then there is no statute of limitations. I think I'm correct on that, right, Andrea?
Right.
Yeah.
So what do you mean evidence found? So if I have DNA evidence,
or a sexual assault kit was done, a police report was filed, or there was an open investigation that at the time. So if those all those factors kind of come into play, then there is no statute of limitations for reporting and for moving forth with any charges. Now, do we have a say-so in whether or not something gets prosecuted or something is charged? No, that's up to the reporting law enforcement agency.
It's up to the district attorney to see if it's going to be prosecuted.
True, but it's also up to the law enforcement agency if they're going to push forward to even moving it along to that process. What I would encourage the caller to do is go to our website, go to TASA.org, and look up legal services for survivors. There are nonprofit agencies that we work with directly that are specifically funded to work with survivors and answer all of their legal questions, specifically dealing with issues regarding childhood victimization.
So this is something that needs to be addressed on a case-by-case
Absolutely.
Basis. So just because one person got a yes doesn't mean that you're going to get a no or whatever. You know, you just so call in, investigate, figure this out. Let me go to another caller, and this is Joanne. Joanne, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thank you. What I wanted to address was the broader issue that you started out with, not to diminish everything that people are saying, but there are endless stories out there that need to be said. And what has happened with the Kavanaugh hearings is complete disappointment for women, that a woman came forward to tell her story, her very believable story, and there is evidence, further evidence that corroborated it. And what we saw was the possibility was triggering everybody, women coming forward and being triggered and being able to tell the truth, but it fell right back into the same old pattern of it's a woman telling her story, a group of old white men using their power to shame everybody. And so what has happened now is the worst of situations. Instead of being able to model new behavior or new attitudes towards women, it's like there's some kind of disconnect between how much women's feelings count or how much they count in general. So we've ended up with Kavanaugh now being a Supreme Court judge. We're hearing from the president. He apologized for us. We didn't apologize. And none of us plan to apologize. The very minority of women who are coming out in defense of Kavanaugh.
Right.
Had there been further investigations, then people, women, might believe him and might feel good about him being on the Supreme Court.
Right.
But there weren't. It was cut off. So now we have a Supreme Court no one believes in, and women being shamed and blamed.
Joanne, thank you for your call. I do appreciate you bringing up some very fantastic points. And one thing that she touches on is that it seemed like, we're seeing that it might be easier for more women to come forward with their stories. But also, on the other half, is it easier for the establishment, people in power, to dismiss these stories, these allegations? Are they able to almost brand allegations as fake news in order for their own convenience or their own political agenda? So I really want to hear from Andrea Lopez with the Rape Crisis Center of San Antonio. Are women, are they concerned that their stories, their reporting of what happened to them will not be taken seriously?
While I certainly can't represent or speak on behalf of all women or any group in particular, I can say that the events that unfolded in the space of the Kavanaugh hearing surrounding Dr. Ford's testimony and the response that she received and how her story was picked apart, she was even mocked, and TASA echoes this in their statement as well, that absolutely sends a super detrimental message to survivors everywhere that they're not heard, we don't believe you. If you do come forward, you won't be met in that response of safety and belief. And so I think that's exactly the work that we're in. It's the movement space that we're cultivating in again, as TASA echoes, giving hope to those who feel that they can't even come forward.
Right. And so TASA, which is the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault, Rip Giprich, real quickly, how can we make women, how do we change the paradigm?
Well, our most powerful leaders made a mockery of her testimony and her allegations. And what that did was send a harmful message to women saying that your voice doesn't matter and that we are not going to hear you. But I think what's important is for us to reiterate that all claims of sexual violence and sexual abuse, regardless of how severe, regardless of when they occurred, regardless of how a person even remembers what happened to them, that all claims of sexual violence be treated as unique, as credible, and as serious.
And Sar Cermak, with the director for the Consent Academy, if people are having sexual violence against another, against consent, what do you do? I mean, you move forward, you fight. What do we do?
Well, the individual has to make that determination for themselves, whatever is right for them, whatever is best for them and their current situation, that's what's most important. As a country, as a society, I think, as Rick was saying, we start believing people at the beginning. We start listening to people, we start talking to them, and we find ways to support them, both through like the Rape Crisis Center or the hotlines, but also in our individual organizations, we do everything we can to listen to these people when they come forward and make sure they understand that we believe them for what they're saying.
All right. This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. We have local resources available. They're listed on our website at tpr.org. I want to thank Andrea Lopez with the Rape Crisis Center of San Antonio, Rick Giprich Jr. with the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault, Sar Cermak is with the Consent Academy. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.